Well, welcome everybody to the Worship Project podcast. We are so excited that you're here with us today. Today on the panel, we have, I have three of my friends here. We're all involved with the Worship Project in some capacity. And so on the end, we've got Joshua Rambaju. We've got Derek Tam, who's the founder and director and CEO and president of the Worship Project. We've got Nikki Fletcher, who is... We'll say you're an adjunct worship project member, and myself, yes. Adam Hoskins. I do some things. Anyways, we're glad to be here today. We wanted to open up the conversation, and we're hoping that this podcast will serve as a forum of conversation surrounding worship in our churches and how we go about it, not just what we do, but also why we do the things that we do. And so today we're talking about stewarding the context that we have, that we're in. We're in a situation, I don't know if you caught the Pilot Zero episode that we've launched on Apple iTunes and wherever you consume your podcasts. But we've been talking loosely about what reintegration looks like. And so now we find ourselves in a new context. We find ourselves in new land in which we are able, normal has changed. Normal has changed for all of us, for all of our churches. So what do we do with this new normal? How do we steward this context? And, what does this reveal in us, both for our benefit, but also for our pruning? So I'm going to toss it to you, Nikki, to just kind of talk a little bit about, how this transforms us.
Yeah, I mean, I think like we've all been experiencing it in different ways. Yeah. And so it's like this funny mix of going through it yourself and then also coming together as a collective and like then how to process it together as a people. And I think the thing that's like been so stark to me, it's funny, I was thinking the other day about how... how important the resurrection is. Just that, like, pretty we're important. Not just, I mean, pretty important. Okay, obviously for our faith, important stamp.
I'd say.
But also that, like, Jesus didn't just rise from the dead, like, metaphorically or in his mind or as a force or something, that there's like a physical touching and being with that is, I just think, like, other than in this season, I have not experienced how desperate I needed Jesus to rise from the dead physically in his body so that like we could as a people experience each other not as metaphor or not far away, but actually like physically.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think like, I feel like I've returned to my humanity in a way I haven't experienced in a really long time. I feel like I've been reintroduced to like my body and like the body and how desperate we need to be together. And I think like, there are online churches and there are all kinds of online things that are good. But I think having this on such a wide platform in such a long period of time, at least for me, has revealed how much we do need physicality. Like our humanity is not divorced from our physical beings.
Yeah.
I know.
Wow. Yeah. I think about, the ability to now gain deeper perspective of the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
And we've all been forced into this new land, right? This new land of online church. Zoom has gone through the roof. For those of you who have invested in Zoom, kudos to you. You are now a millionaire, right? Now we've been forced into this new land of online church and what it means to engage. And I think that like both for our benefit and for our pruning, that us as leaders in churches, we're now forced to see that there are, that we have to find new ways to reach people.
Yeah.
It's not enough to just open the doors of a church. It's not enough to just say, if we build it, they will come, right? And we realize that there are situations where even though we've built it, that people aren't able to come.
Yeah.
And that's, the reality is that this is, that the pandemic has actually revealed a side of the church that's every day. There are people who are shut-ins. There are people who are disabled in long-term care homes. There are people who are unable to access, the resources of actually being in a church and how valuable is an online ministry or a phone ministry, you know, in those contexts. I just think of like how much that's actually revealed for us. And it's no longer this side project that the youth or the young people can do. Like, oh, live streaming. Oh, that's for you kids and stuff. Yeah. No, it's actually for everybody. And I think that this pandemic has really shown that. Anybody else want to comment on that at all? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree that online church is no longer a novelty. I think for a lot of churches that have not necessarily placed that on the priority list, now it was the only option. I've seen, you know, from super high quality productions with the, you know, the picture in the picture, the Brady Bunch style worship, to a pastor struggling with his iPad, you know, to get the preaching going. And that was it. And I think those are beautiful expressions of the church. And everybody's been pushed online in some way based on their capacity. You know, some churches have the resources, others do not. But I really like that point you brought up about, you know, we don't think about the fringes of our congregation all that often when it relates to the gathering, right? There are some people who, even before COVID, were unable to join us, and only now do we have the ability and the resources to reach them, like the call-in service. You know, it's like, I think of it as like the modern day radio. You turn it on Sunday morning and there you go. That's a live church experience for you, just reaching the fringes.
And you know, Josh, you talked about this idea of like priority, right? And when I think about priority, I think about church budgets and resources, allocated resources. So what may have been gone to staffing, live event staffing, and resources, maybe communion or, you know, whatever it is that a church spends money on. Now the priority and the resources have shifted now to this kind of this online this online segment, right? And so how does this look like what changes do you see, not just in where the resources have gone, but how does that kind of like shifted the landscape for our churches? Josh, I'm gonna let you talk to that, and then I'll go to you, Derek.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the side project mentality is definitely the way a lot of churches have been moving, where it's like, well, we'll scrape together some resources, or, you know, all the old tech from the youth room that is now migrated to a storage room, we're going to use that for the live stream. And now that we've had no choice, you know, we have to invest in it. I think it's really important to understand where we were before COVID in terms of live streaming and the resources we were allocating versus the transition. Because as churches start to come back, we're going to start to see this re-emphasis on the gathering, right? And, you know, it's going to take a lot of people, more than we would have in the past, right? Making sure that people are maintaining distancing, making sure that, you know, surfaces are clean. All these little things that we left to the caretakers in the midweek, we now have to do in between gatherings. And I think it's so important that we don't neglect our online campuses, our online churches in this season, right? We can easily reallocate whatever we had invested to online back to the in-person. And now we're alienating those people who, the majority of them, don't necessarily feel comfortable coming back to church.
Yeah, Derek, do you want to talk about maybe the change that needs to happen in resource shifting for church leaderships?
Yeah, I think kind of going along with what Josh said, but at the same time, seeing this, I guess, primary focus on live stream, something that I've noticed that so many churches, and I come from a small, medium-sized church, right? So much of our effort and manpower has now gone to how do I make this live stream work? And now, you know, and all our capacity was pushed towards that side. It's almost if you were to, I don't know, in my mind, if you were to kind of parallel that to what it would be to, you know, when we're all physically together, it's like, and now all our emphasis is on one Sunday service. And that's kind of how I felt, you know? Everything we're doing is about like this like Sunday experience now that it's online. And even when we were physically together, you know, I don't think anybody, one of us would feel like that's like necessarily the right thing to do, to focusing on like, we're only on like this like Sunday church. And I think that's like, to me, that's a little bit of a danger, you know, that there's this emphasis there. And so for me, I feel like as much as we need to still continue this, you know, online thing that, you know, that Josh was saying, we cannot omit where people are at, right? And I think, how do we still, you know, in this reintegration process, care for people is something that I'm always just wondering about. How do we do this? How are we allocating resources, people, pastoral leadership, care, you know, and the word that comes to me is just like, how do we maintain like compassion for people rather than just like providing like a service for people,
yeah,
you know? And so that's something that's just really heavy on my heart right now, because I don't even have an answer for that. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how to do it well because everyone's at such a different place. You're getting some people who are like, I'm ready to come back now. Yeah. And you're having another person saying like, I really don't know how I feel about that. And I'm maybe waiting for a vaccine or when, you know, when the numbers drop down to zero, then maybe I'm ready to come back. Yeah. You know, like it's just so, it's so drastically different. That is a very big task for us as a church on how do you really navigate that?
You know, I think about that word that you say, compassion, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a bigger deal than maybe we're giving it, you know?
Yeah.
And in terms of the balance between, or the correlation between compassion and allocation of resources, right? Like there's that old saying that says you put your money where your mouth is, right? And and really, if I were talking to, if there's any church leaders watching this, or if I'm talking to church leaders, I would say that like, you know, it really reflects if in this reintegration process, all of our resources just shift back to the live experience and we completely neglect. I think it's really important that we know that like, that we've entered into this new land and because we've kind of broken through this threshold, that box will never be closed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We can never go back to online being this weird, ominous thing that's a gamble for certain churches and can we afford, can we not? We've all done it. From churches of 25 people, I've seen people, you know, preaching at their kitchen table. They set up a tablecloth and stuff and they prop up a table mat or whatever it is. You know what I mean? They're preaching at their kitchen table. Yeah. One of my good friends leads worship from his kitchen. He sets up a scene and stuff like, so we know, you know what I mean? We know the capabilities, we know the reach of this thing. And so I would say that like more than a practical, but the spiritual implications of what it's actually saying to our people, of where we put our resources in terms of the live experience versus online. And I don't know if we can go back to a place where we're 90% live, 10% online or whatever it is, the balance was and stuff. I think that it really says a lot in terms of compassion to the people that can't, that are not reachable. You know,
and like to go off of that too, I think that like, you know, just because we've all done live stream online for however many months, like we're not all experts all of a sudden. And like, this is how you do online church. So I think that like, it's a tool to connect people. Mm-hmm. But again, it's just a tool. And so to have the temptation to say like, oh, well, I'm going to do this thing. We figured it out good enough. And now we're just going to do that so that those people on the fringes or whatever are, they have like what they need. And you sort of have the temptation to check that box where, you know, how are we like continuing to edit that process? How are we reflecting? How are we going back a year later and saying like, is this working? And not just, you know, from like a framework perspective, but how are we having compassion talking to people? Are they actually feeling connected? Or is this just a tool that we've put on people and we haven't really touched it or worked with it or allowed it to be, you know, like something that's in living hands to be able to actually serve people?
That's a good point because when we think about compassion, it's not like the tools we're using. It's really about people, right? Yeah. Jesus was compassionate over people. Yeah. And so I think one of the biggest things is the stuff that we're actually doing, is it actually working in our context? And so you know what? Like we're doing things a certain way, but for another group, it's not gonna work, right? And whether you're a church of like 30 people or like 3,000 people, it's gonna look completely different, right? And I think the pressure needs to be taken off of some of our leaders of, especially now in this like comparison culture. Now everyone's online, you're gonna see everyone else's thing. While they're doing it this way, they're doing it that way. I'm like, we gotta kind of strip that back. I'm like, you know what? They're doing that and that works for them. But if we tried to do that, maybe people will just think we're like, putting on a show, and for our little community, you know? And I think we got to do what works. And in the end, if we have compassion over people, then we're thinking about the care of our specific people, the people who are walking through our doors or walking, tuning into our stream. Like, is it actually working? And are we actually caring for these people and I don't know, and reaching them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I love that point that we need to show grace and take the pressure off of our leaders too, because the nature of online platforms is that they're dynamic. They're constantly changing. You know, the way people engaged on Facebook 6 months ago is completely different than the way people engage now. Mm. And, you know, that's without the limitations of a pandemic. They're pushing out new features. So I think to be able to keep up with your context and to be able to keep up with a dynamic platform while maintaining that compassion aspect of not just the Sunday gathering, but the groups, it's such a daunting thing as a leader for a church who may not necessarily have the resources to even do one well.
Yeah, we got compassion for you as leaders.
I know. I'm just going to lay hands and pray over people
in the name
right
of
now.
Jesus. Yeah, exactly. Give them grace. Yeah.
And that I think it takes time.
Yeah.
I think that, like, exactly what you were saying, what worked a couple months ago isn't working now. And I think that we're noticing that. It was funny, even my husband the other day, you know, we're engaging in online church, and he said, like, I think now I'm tired. It was like, it took like 5 months for him to be like, okay, like, I miss live worship now.
Yeah.
Like, where it's like, you're in it for a time, and then, like, as the brain kind of consolidates and goes through different seasons, so it's like even 6 months from now, the thing that we're doing might not work.
Yep.
Because people are tired, because they've been, or maybe, like, depending on work rhythms or kids going back to school or whatever that might be, right? It's a living, dynamic thing.
Man,
which is frustrating.
I think for a future conversation, I really want to visit that idea of, Derek, you mentioned it, but the idea of comparison versus inspiration.
That's good.
And I think that it's like, it's really revealed, you know what I mean? And the whole online church, like, if you think about the little, like, 150 person church who feels a pressure to be like elevation, you know? Honestly, online, are you kidding me? You know what I mean? Can you imagine the rental for that? Like, anyways, well, we can revisit that, you know, at a different time. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about people, right? Like, there's so many people now that have, I guess, different roles because of this new landscape, right? Like, we've got, you know, maybe the kid who was hired on as maybe an intern or just above intern and a part-time has now become the star player.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Now the entire operation hinges on this 21-year-old kid who understands what live streaming is. You know what I mean? And it was like, I mean, I do it for gaming, but I guess now I could do it for your entire, you know what I mean? 500-person congregation. Like, let's do this, right? Oh, man. But I think about, like, maybe for leaders, like, what are some things that, you know, some insight that we can give in terms of empowering leaders for this context? And how do we build people in this? How do we build people up?
I know. I mean, we were just saying, like, it's the people. That's the whole point of this thing. And I just can't, I mean, as a recovering, you know, control freak, like, it continues to blow my mind that, you know, Jesus, when you think of him on earth doing his ministry that God has given him to do, and, like, if he wanted it to be perfect, like, he would have just stayed. True. He would have, like, we could have lived till a billion years old for all he wanted. Yeah. But, like, he chose to decentralize power. Mm. He chose to decentralize leadership. That was a strategy. It was worth the risk of whatever failure we might perceive or whatever bumps along the road. It was worth it for him to decentralize. So even, like, when you look at kind of the linear narrative in scripture, like in Luke, you go from, like, John the Baptist and then Jesus coming in, he's choosing and calling his disciples. And then, like, it goes all the way up. This is my favorite part. Then, like, in Luke, he sends out the 70 two by two.
Yep.
And he's like, okay. And, like, it's this pattern of, like, okay, I'm going to, just like one person, decentralized power, teaching, miracles. I got a group of 12. I'm going to give away more power and authority. Then like more teaching, more miracles than 70 people, two by two. Go, I'll be with you. Go. And I love it. This is like, they come back and they're like amazed. They're like, these demons listened to me. We healed all these people. Yeah. And they're amazed. And he's like, great, keep going.
Yeah.
And then like, he dies, raises from the dead, and then he sends out the Great Commission. Mm, yeah. And so now, like, it's this constant pattern of decentralizing power. And so, like, him saying to people, like, I know it sounds crazy, and I know that you might not feel equipped, and I know that, like, this might not seem like the best idea. Yeah. What might seem like the best, safest idea is to control, is to re-centralize power. Sure. Who are the experts?
Sure, sure.
Who are the people who know what to do? Yeah. Let's give them more authority.
Who holds the vision.
Exactly. Like let's give them more authority and power, and we'll just do whatever you say. And Jesus is trying to say to people, like, who you are is important. Mm. Actually, like, go and do that thing. And it's okay. It's worth the risk to me for you to work it out and stumble it out along the way.
Yeah.
And so I think for us as leaders to be continuing to help reframe and communicate like that Jesus-centered vision to people to say like, it's okay. And then creating that culture where it actually is okay to have some bumps along the road.
Yeah, yeah.
And for people to come back and say like, oh man, I actually was sent out 2x2. I came back in. That demon did not listen to me.
It did not go well.
Actually, so here's my report. It was really messed up. But like, how do we create the kind of safe place where people can report back and come back in and say like, yeah, this was not what I thought it was going to be. Mm. Like, okay, it's okay. Go out again. And so it's like that constant decentralizing of power.
And it's tough, right? Like it's such a tough and tricky balance for leaders. And I feel for you because I mean, to empathize with leaders, right? Like, you know, some of these church leaders have, I mean, most of them have raised the church from nothing, right? And they've grown and they've groomed and they've brought people along the way and they've casted and communicated vision and there's blood, sweat, and tears into this thing. Mm. And then suddenly COVID hits and they're no longer in control.
No.
And I can imagine like along the way, and I don't want to condemn leaders because I know that it's so much more than this, but I wonder how much of ego is actually wrapped up into it, right? And so...
And fear, genuine, there's care under there. There's all kinds of things.
And I think of Jesus's ministry and how, when you read through, my wife and I have been combing through the Gospels, and as we were reading through it, one of the things that stands out is that like nothing that he does is driven out of ego. Mm. Nothing, like all of the things that he's, you know what I mean? Like he's not looking. Every single time Jesus is tempted to involve ego, he just dips. He's like, you know what I mean? Like the crowds want to make him, you know what I mean? Want to make him, he's like, see ya, I'm gone. Woo, you know, he's out. Like Jesus is gone. You know what I mean? And he says things like, oh, it's not yet my time and whatnot. But anyway, like in terms of when we talk about like leaders, empowering leaders, I think good leaders are very self-aware of how much their ego comes into it. And again, like talking to church leaders, like, I mean, I think that's one of the things that we have to check ourselves on. Mm. You know, in some capacity, we all that's lead right. ministries, mm. right? And I think that on one hand, God has given a vision for what this ministry should look like, right? God has imparted something unto us. But on the other hand, God has also structured it in a way that vision will never come to pass unless you give away that power.
That's right.
Unless you start to actually dish it away and allow other people to come in and do those things. I think it's so important that we understand that.
And there's like that accountability and that like shifting, right? So like in that example, when all these 2x2s come back to Jesus and they're amazed, like, look at what this was crazy. We did this. They listened to us. And then he teaches them right after. He says like, that's great. Mm. But be more thankful that your name is in the book of life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so he's just like tweaking it. Like, that's good. But like, let's keep our eyes on the prize here. Like, let's make sure that our egos are in check and that we're reoriented so that you can go back out. And so I think as leaders, it's a parenting process, you know, to come back in and then to send out. It really is such a parenting paradigm in how Jesus treats us, you know?
Yeah. I actually think like discipleship, it's in my opinion, right now in this context, you know, we're kind of talking about like, you know, what's going to happen as we kind of journey into the new context. But this current context, I feel like it's been really hard, right?
Yeah.
It's a really tough thing.
Understatement.
Yeah, probably.
Come on, man.
Right?
Preach on that. Come like, on, boy.
Discipleship is following, right? And walking with and alongside. Mm. And how do we do that when we're in this place right now, we're saying like, we can't really walk alongside each other.
6 feet apart.
Six feet apart or, you know, like via screen or whatever. And it's like a life thing, right? Well, yeah, for the most part, right? Yeah. And so when I think about, you know, how do we disciple people and empower people in this context, I feel like, you know, when we were all pushed into this position of coronavirus and pandemic and online church, majority of us are probably on like adrenaline trying to figure out, you know, like forget what you're doing right now, forget what you're doing. Like, we just gotta like get our heads together and
Sunday. We need
get this
Sunday.
Done. We just need to do it. Yeah, like legit. that's exactly what it was. And for me, in my context, like, you know, I'm lucky that I was in that, in this position of like, okay, at least I'm just a little bit techie. Yeah. But if I wasn't there, you know, I don't know what would have happened, right? But I was lucky to be in that situation where I, you know, computer science grad, and I'm using my technology, whatever I have, whatever resources I have to be able to put something together, you know? And I was just like scrambling, and it was so stressful, that little bit. And then the more the live streams became like a normal thing, okay, it's normalized, like Facebook and YouTube and Zoom are like, you know, the servers are good and nothing's breaking down. The first question I was asking myself was like, how do I get people involved? Yeah. You know, how do I get my worship leaders involved? How do I get, and I realized that more people were actually willing to get involved because they don't have to be up on stage. Isn't that weird? At least because we pre-record our stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and so I felt that so many of our community members and our congregation was like, yeah, like I'll do scripture reading, like I'll pray for service when they would never in their life maybe even feel like they're ready to do this. And it was a really interesting opportunity to see like this as a very, really good opportunity to bring people and empower them, saying like, hey, like you got this and you could do this. And this is, I think everyone would love seeing each other's faces online, but long-term when it comes to like discipleship and walking alongside people, like there's a big disconnect for me personally. I'm like, you know, this is not it, you know? There's gotta be, there's always more. And like, you know, Nikki, as you said before, like, this craving of being physical with one another is, that's how we were built, you know? And when it comes to discipleship and empowerment, for me, it's like, I feel like that's a necessity. You know, we have to be walking alongside each other, like, you know, and that's how we see each other. That's how we grow together. That's how we learn from one another, is being beside each other and seeing how you do life and seeing how you lead, seeing how you make decisions and all that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think about Josh, even like our relationship, you know, and how so much of that was birthed out of proximity, right? Yeah. Just because we were, you know, I was a youth pastor at one point, and Josh was a youth.
We're going back.
And then I know, man, we're just exposing it. We're exposing it. Here we go.
It's my time.
But I mean, and just how much of actual discipleship happens just out of proximity, because you're around one another and you've got common interests. And so then you start to see those common interests work together in some capacities. And then out of that, you know, I don't know how many projects we've done together. There's gotta be literally hundreds of stuff. And then after a lot of those, it's been like, oh, let's go grab a cone, or let's go, you know what I mean? Or like, let's go, you know, to the music store or whatever it is, or on a long drive somewhere to a gig or whatever it is, right? Like, there's just so many opportunities there. Mm. And I think about what you're saying in terms of like walking alongside and how much more intention it takes to disciple someone, because you're not in that proximity. Everybody's isolated doing their own work to try and put something together, you know? And so you know, when you say that's not it, like, I agree with that. Ain't it, Chief, right? Like there's, we've got to adapt. We've got to be able to adapt, right? Because I think if coronavirus had gone on, let's say this hadn't been a 3-month thing. Let's say this had been a 3-year thing. Well, what are we going to say? Like, totally. Discipleship in the church stops for 3 years?
Yeah.
It doesn't happen, right? Like, we've got to adapt, but it's difficult.
Yeah. And then I think that like your limits get revealed a lot more, even like socially, emotionally. Mm. So when you're like a leader and you have like 8 people around you in proximity, then all of a sudden when you're home or when you're online, like actually your limits become so much smaller in some ways. And so then like, you actually have to send out more people to be in proximity with other people, right? Yeah, because I can't be on a Zoom call with four people a day. Like, I'm not going to make it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, but if I have one person, and I just love like the Joshua model, right? Like Moses is, like wherever he is, Joshua just is. And there's not a lot of...
That was it, Dad. That was literally it. We'd be walking around this... We're filming right now at Global Kingdom Ministries. And it's literally, that's exactly the story. Wherever Adam was, soon you just see this little, like...
It's what, honestly, it is like one of my favorite passages in the Bible where it's like this spectacular scene and Moses in, you know, the tent meeting with the Lord and all these amazing things happen. And then it's just like that little scripture at the end, like, and... You're like, Joshua was there. And you're like, what? Yeah. He was there the whole time. He doesn't have anything to say. It's not the like the most important part of the story, but that's the whole point.
Yeah.
So like wherever he was, like he just was.
Yeah.
They were just in proximity together.
Yeah.
And that somehow I think can be underplayed, like where we think we have to always have like a discipleship strategy and all these things, which is important, but to not forget that proximity is so organic.
Yeah.
It's so symbiotic that like there's so much that's transferred in that proximity relationship.
Absolutely. Adam gave me a piece of advice a few years ago, which it's that that Joshua model is like, look behind you. Who's following? And those are the people. You don't have to go look, hey, I'm going to disciple you today. Like, it doesn't work like that. It's organic. It's the people that are, you know, that are close by you, that want to be around you because they see something.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to understand why when you're in that position of, really? Me?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny. Our staff culture here at GKM is so relational that we don't really, when we were in the office, we'd never really schedule meetings. We'd just walk into other people's offices and then you'd have this 45 minute conversation, which is great when you're trying to hash out an idea, but incredibly frustrating.
It's both the best and worst thing ever. It's amazing, but it's horrible.
Horrible.
But it's amazing.
Right? Yeah. And so just to take that as an example, as soon as we pivoted online and we shut down our building only to come in and record, we would have these like Zoom meetings that were consecutive, like right after the other. On a Monday, I would clock in like 6 or 7 hours, no exaggeration, of Zoom meetings, and I'd be drained. And you bring up capacity, Nikki. I think that's so important, is your capacity is in some ways diminished online, but maybe it's more indicative of your capacity in general. Like, we think that we can disciple en masse. We think that we can just like, my worship team of 20, my worship team of 150.
Yep.
I'm the guy. I got you en masse, but it doesn't work like that. I'm meeting with two guys weekly, and even that's a lot for me. But then I think about when I tried to do it with like 5 or 10. How effective was I en masse?
And then when you look at the wholeness of people's lives, when you look at, you know, like what are their businesses like? Are they in the school system?
Yeah.
I mean, like as soon as you add another child to your family, like that's a disciple. Like so much of my mental energy is like discipling my child. Yeah. So like there's so
bottle.
Yeah, exactly. Discipleship. Lord, receive my worship. Like, no, but seriously though. And so like those are parts of our holistic discipleship that can be ignored.
Yeah.
Especially when people are home right now with kids.
Yeah.
I mean, that's anyway.
So to sum this up, when we talk about discipleship, we all agree that proximity is best.
Yeah.
You know, that we want to be in close proximity with people. We agree that in this time in COVID, that maybe proximity isn't available to us. And so we have to measure our capacity. And it's better to pour our life out into a few than to try and do many. And Nikki, you talked about commissioning another person, commissioning more, sending out more people. Guys, this has been great. This is the segment one of our talk. This has been awesome. And thank you all so much for checking this out. We hope that you enjoy this and that this is enriching. So God bless you all, and we'll see you in the next one.